Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, www.ciut.fm over the internet. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Rob Moore co-hosting and bringing us the news. I'll give you a quick introduction to our program, and then we'll jump into hearing our weekly dose of news. So today we're going to be talking about feral cats, which is actually something in the 4 years that I've been hosting and producing this program we've never talked about, and so I really wanted to tackle this issue, and we have two people that are going to bring their expertise to the radio show today. First, we're going to be speaking with Joe Meal, and he works with the New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance, and he acts as one of their feral cat advisors, and he's going to tell us about maintaining his colony of 17. Yes, you heard that correctly. 17 neutered, vaccinated, and beautiful feral cats, and he is the recipient of the Alley Cat Allies Feral Cat Activist of the Year 2004 award, and he's going to tell us about his experiences trapping and transporting feral animals. And then at 11:30, we're going to be speaking with Sarah Whalen. She's the executive director of Pets Alive, which is an incredible shelter. It's a no-kill animal shelter, and they rescue, rehabilitate, and place animals in need, and they really work with a lot of animals that nobody else wants, including other shelters. So they're a pretty amazing organization, and Sarah has a lot of experience and knowledge relocating cat colonies, and she's going to share some tips for people about if you encounter a feral cat and what to do, and some first aid that you can administer while you're waiting to get that animal to a shelter or into your home. But before we jump into our conversation about feral cats, we're going to hear a little bit of news from Rob Moore.
And we'll also find out what feral means.
Yeah, feral versus stray cats, because they are different.
Mm-hmm. Everyone asks, I talk about feral cats or feral pigs and whatever. And Rob, what the hell does feral mean?
We're going to find out what the origins of the cat overpopulation problems are as well, and some of the things that we can do as human beings to help ameliorate the problem.
In this week's news, David Suzuki attacks Marineland. Judge agrees PETA footage is disturbing, and the importance of properly training a pet dog. First from ABC News, Japan has failed in its bid to resume commercial whaling during a vote at the International Whaling Commission meeting in Ulsan, South Korea, leaving the 19-year whaling ban in place. 29 countries voted against, with 23 supporting the plan. Japan had presented a proposal to the IWC for an eventual return to commercial catches. The whaling lobby yesterday failed to garner a simple majority to introduce secret ballots, which conservationists feared would favor the pro-whaling countries. Japan kills around 650 whales annually under its so-called scientific program, which is allowed despite the moratorium on commercial catches. Federal Environment Minister Senator Ian Campbell has welcomed the Commission's decision. He has told ABC Radio he plans to use the momentum from today's decision to move a motion at the Commission tomorrow to stop Japan from commercial whaling under the guise of science. To basically say to Japan in very clear terms that blowing up whales, destroying them with explosives, and slicing them up and selling them in Japanese whale restaurants is not science, he said. Senator Campbell earlier told ABC Sydney Radio there is renewed speculation Japan is paying small countries such as Nauru to join the commission and vote for the resumption of whaling. He also questioned the validity of the IWC, calling it, quote, an organization that's operating in the shadows. It's regularly having secret meetings, and this sort of signing up a whole bunch of countries at the last moment is certainly something that would make any reasonable, sensible person wonder what's going on in this, the body that should be looking after whales. And in August, we'll be talking to a Japanese animal rights movement about the dolphin hunt in September, and we'll also talk to her about the whaling going on there, too. From Niagara this week, Marineland is a thug that is trying to use the legal system to keep a Niagara-based citizens group from expressing its concerns about keeping whales and other marine mammals in captivity, says David Suzuki. You have a thug in your community, the Canadian scientist, author, and host of CBC TV's The Nature of Things told an audience of roughly 600 Niagara residents in St. Catharines last weekend of the longtime Niagara Falls theme park that has launched a $250,000 lawsuit against Niagara Action for Animals and one of its directors, Dan Wilson. Suzuki, who waived his usual speaker fee ranging into the thousands of dollars to come to Niagara to support Wilson and the group in its legal battle against Marineland, said he was outraged earlier this year to hear about what he called a, quote, slap suit aimed at preventing people from speaking their mind on an issue involving the treatment of living creatures. Recalling a time when he took his then 10-year-old daughter out on the waters off British Columbia where she could see an orca swimming freely, Suzuki said even she knew at that age that, quote, it was not right to take a magnificent animal like that and put it into a bathtub, end quote. The lawsuit was sparked by an incident 4 years ago when Wilson and the group sent literature to an area car dealer that was planning to hold an employee party at Marineland. The literature was similar to what the group has often handed out to tourists near the theme park's gates and discusses why, in its view, it is wrong to keep whales and dolphins in captivity. In its suit, Marineland charged that the literature was libelous and stated that it, quote, has suffered and will continue to suffer economic loss as a result of the libel. The Suzuki event raised about $20,000 for the defense against the suit, which is still working its way through the court system. And from The Scotsman, an anti-vivisection group has won a court battle over secretly shot footage showing animal experiments conducted by a drug company. The High Court refused to grant a full injunction to pharmaceutical research company Covance Laboratories to prevent the pressure group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals screening a film shot covertly at one of the company's facilities in the United States. The film was shown at an anti-vivisection demonstration in Harrogate, North Yorkshire, where Covance has a laboratory, provoking the firm to gain an interim injunction to stop it being shown. Yesterday, following a hearing earlier this month at the High Court in Leeds, Judge Peter Langan refused to grant a new injunction, though he described the content of the film as, quote, highly disturbing. Reading his judgment at Newcastle Crown Court, the judge responded to PETA's QC Desmond Brown's description of the video as horrendous. He said, Mr. Brown's rhetoric may owe something to forensic license, but having watched the video, I am unable to say that his language is far short of the mark. I would regard the description highly disturbing as fitting the video precisely. I take just two aspects of what can be seen, the rough manner in which animals are handled and the bleakness of the surroundings in which they are kept. These are matters which, even to a viewer with no particular interest in animal welfare, at least cry out for explanation. According to PETA, the video was shot over a number of months by an American woman who infiltrated the workforce at a Covance lab in Vienna, Virginia. PETA campaign coordinator Andrew Butler said, the court ruling means that the public and the media have the right to see how monkeys are being systematically abused in the world's largest testing laboratory. Videotape of animals being hit and choked at Covance is not proprietary information. It is criminal evidence that deserves to be seen, and we will continue to fight for the right to do so. And lastly, from the Toronto Star, the dog shot and killed by police yesterday in the midst of mauling a Toronto teen was trained to be a violent guard dog, his one-time owner said. I didn't know how to train him at all, so I trained him badly. I trained him wrong, said Rudy Bennett, 25, who looked after the dog, a pit bull shepherd mixed breed, before he moved out of the family home. The dog attacked 16-year-old David Crow at about 12:50 p.m. as the teen, unannounced, entered his neighbor's house. The dog, which police say was usually locked in the basement of the Sackville Green home in Regent Park, was on the ground floor and lunged when Crow entered. The dog latched onto the boy's calf and wouldn't let go, witnesses said. Crow was taken to St. Michael's Hospital where his cuts were treated. No stitches were needed and he was sent home with prescriptions for painkillers and antibiotics. The incident could have been much worse if it weren't for the quick actions of the three film crew workers and proximity of the police who were clearing traffic near the film set. The crew workers used a light stand to pry the dog off the boy while police ran to the scene. The dog continued the attack before police shot it four times, the last shot piercing the dog's skull and killing him instantly. And the reason I wanted to read that was to echo Dr. Corin's point. We had him on back in September. His point about the importance of training every pet dog. He said just the most basic training course, like at an SPCA, can decrease the dog's chances of biting a human by 90%. Just a basic training course at an SPCA. And that's not, of course, just pit bulls and, usually referred to as dangerous dogs, but all dogs. Just a usual training course at an SPCA will decrease the dog's chances of biting a human by 90%. So it's very important.
The kid when he was running to the film crew, I thought that was pretty smart. I don't know if it was just coincidence, but I mean, if you're being attacked by someone, I guess it makes sense to run towards a place that's highly populated. So I thought that was pretty good. The CBC story that I read said that the calf injury was actually quite serious. So some conflicts with the stories. So CBC said it was a serious wound. And
well, yeah, the story today, it was just printed today. It said he didn't need any stitches and he was sent home. So, didn't sound too serious.
Interesting.
We'll see.
You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. That was Rob Moore giving us the news. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, and we're going to take a short musical break and then come back with Joe Mealy. He's going to talk to us about feral cats, and he's maintaining a colony of 17 feral cats right now, and he has extensive experience trapping and transporting feral animals. So stay tuned, and we'll come back with Joe. Welcome back to you.
And we're back.
You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. That was The Evens and a track called Blessed Not Lucky, and that's going out to Bluebeard the Cat. This program is dedicated to all of our lovely cats, animal companions out there. And if you heard us talking a little bit just as we were coming back in, we were talking about having Peter Singer, trying to get Peter Singer, who is, of course, the author of the 1975 book Animal Liberation, on the show. If you have any opinions about whether or not we should try to get Peter on the... We're talking about all the different controversies that he's been involved with, and we haven't had him on the program since my tenure here anyway, and we were thinking about trying to get him on. Very controversial figure. If you have any thoughts on Peter Singer, do send them our way. animalvoices@ciut.fm is our email address, and of course our shows are archived, and there's additional information about our guests on our website at animalvoices.ca.
And I'll just mention one thing. We're also podcasting, which is extremely exciting. I know a few people have really latched on to this, and I want to thank Neil out there, our web guy, for setting that up. So if you have an iPod, you can now get us on podcast, which is really cool.
That's awesome. So now we're going to turn to our interview with Joe Mealy, and he is an activist involved with, well, many different things, but we're gonna focus on his work with the New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance, and he is the one of the feral cat advisors for that organization, and he currently is maintaining a colony of 17 neutered, vaccinated, and otherwise very beautiful feral cats. So, Joe, we're really happy to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me, Lauren and Rob.
So tell us just a little bit more about some of the activism that you're involved with and how you got interested in the animal rights movement before we jump into talking about feral cats.
Oh, it's a very long story, but I'll make it very short. Years ago, maybe about a dozen years or so ago, I stumbled across a simple information table in a local shopping mall, picked up some literature, brought it home, learned about factory farming and veganism and things of that nature, and I was off and running. I think it was maybe several months after seeing that initial literature that I became vegan and became an animal rights activist.
And a lot of your activism now concentrates on, I guess, what are often referred to or who are often referred to as fur-bearing animals, and of course you do the work with feral cats as well.
That is correct.
And this is primarily through the New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance then?
I work primarily through New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance. I'm also a volunteer with Alley Cat Allies, which is the premier national feral cat advocacy group in the United States. I'm on the board of directors for a sanctuary called Pets Alive, and I know you're having Ms. Sarah Whalen on as guest later on in the show. I work with her. I do a lot of things wherever I'm asked to be. That's what I like to do.
And you got the Alley Cat Allies Feral Cat Activists of the Year 2004 award. So why did they give that out, and why did you receive that award?
I received the award, I guess, mainly for my advocacy work on behalf of feral cats. I speak across the state of New Jersey giving TNR presentations, trap, neuter, return presentations, and teaching people how to manage feral cat colonies. I also speak with local township officials and various health departments to initiate animal-friendly ordinances in town where feral cats can be managed properly rather than the traditional pick-up-and-exterminate method that's been tried and has failed so long.
Joe, can you tell us what feral means?
A feral cat is a cat who has been raised by an outdoor mother who hasn't had any contact with humans. They're fearful of people. They won't approach people. I know sometimes health departments are afraid that feral cats are going to attack children or something like that, but it's absolutely not going to happen. When you see cats out in a park or in an alleyway or something like that, and they run from you as soon as they see you, that's a feral cat.
And how is that different from a stray cat?
A stray cat is a cat who is once living with a human who has had personal contact with people and is a little more trusting. Stray cats are often those who get out of their houses and manage to get lost, or cats who were once living with families and who were dumped. And they revert to a semi-feral state, but those stray cats, you can win their trust over again. You can turn them back into happy companion animals.
And what about the ferals? Do they ever acclimatize to humans?
It's possible, but it's very difficult. There have been situations where I know with my colony where I've picked up feral cats and had them neutered and put them back into their colony, and then a year later they've come back very friendly. That seems to be the exception rather than a rule. Once a feral, usually always a feral, and that's why we advocate putting them back into their home environment where they're used to living. That's where they seem to be happiest.
I think the idea of a cat colony is probably pretty unusual to some people, I think especially in urban settings where they tend to think about cats as being sort of aloof loners, and the idea of a colony sort of disrupts that. Can you talk to us about how cat colonies form, and are they sort of like roaming packs of cats in alleys right now, and where do they come from, and how do you take care of them?
Well, they're not roaming packs of cats as you kind of put that idea out there. They do have a home territory. They like to keep to their home territory, and they bond with that territory. Their environment is very important to them. They form because there's an available food source somewhere, be it garbage cans or a dumpster or something of that nature, even some kind people who want to feed them. And also there has to be a shelter source available to them. And that could be underneath a dumpster, under a trailer, anything of that nature. That's where feral cats will congregate. We often see them in back of restaurants and back of shopping malls, things like that.
Are they generally part of the same family then, or could it be groups of families together?
Most often they're all inbred and they're part of the same family. You'll have cats wandering in from... When people leave their unneutered cats outside and they reproduce, the offspring are most likely going to turn out to be feral if they're not picked up immediately. Those cats will wander off, find their own little environment, and create colonies.
Hmm. And you currently take care of a colony of 17 cats. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. When my wife and I first started working on this colony several years ago, the number of cats was in the 40s somewhere. There were kittens dying all over this old welding yard where they currently live, and the situation was very bad. So we decided that we really need to clean this up. And two by two, three by three, we started bringing the cats in for surgery and having them neutered, having them vaccinated against rabies, giving them a temperament evaluation. If they seemed to pass the friendly test, we would adopt them out into good families, as we did with all the kittens and some of the healthy adults. The others, who were still a little too feral and didn't really want much human contact, we put them back where we trapped them. And to this date, there are 17 of them living there. And they are happy and healthy, and I feed them twice a day, and they come and greet me. They don't like being touched. They don't ask for much. They just ask to be fed, and I just love spending time with them.
And where are they? Sorry, Joe, where are they located, and are they safe?
Right now they're safe. They're located on an active welding yard. The men who work there like the cats. They were very happy that a couple of people were willing to come and improve their lot in life. And they have shelters. I've set up little insulated shelters for them so they're warm throughout the winter. I feed them twice a day, and things are going really well for them right now.
So, Joe, tell us about what's involved in trapping a cat that is not wanting any kind of human contact. How do you go about getting the animal into some kind of, I guess, container so you can take them into a vet to be neutered?
The best way to do that is to very slowly start to win over their trust. The only way to do that with a feral cat is to start feeding them regularly. When we started maintaining the colony, the first thing we did was we started feeding them so we could identify how many cats were there. We took pictures of them. We wrote down descriptions. Then after a period of time, we started setting some box traps, humane box traps. I know some of the more popular brands are the Have a Heart or the True Catch trap. And we would tie the doors open and feed the cats inside the trap so they wouldn't have any fear of walking inside. Mm. We would make appointments with the local veterinarian for spay-neuter surgeries. And the morning before that, we would set the traps so that when the cats would walk into there, they would get caught. The door closes shut behind them. Cat kind of freaks out a little bit, so all you really need to do then is put a blanket over them, and they calm down right away. Then we move them into the car for transport over to the vet. After the surgery and a period of recuperation from between 2 to 4 or 5 days, the cats are ready to go back outside.
Do you pay for the operation?
There's a county program which will provide free spay-neuter and free rabies vaccinations. I take advantage of that as often as I can, obviously. When I can't get an appointment for that in a timely enough fashion, I do pay for it myself and bring the cats to my regular veterinarian.
And so would you say in New Jersey and I guess the areas where you've worked that the feral cats are a quote-unquote problem? Like, there's obviously, you sort of alluded to the fact that there's traps that aren't very humane, and clearly people are seeing some of these animals as a problem or as a nuisance. Has that been your experience, that there's sort of been this idea that they're pests and people want to get rid of them?
Initially, people are upset when cats, and rightfully so, when cats are defecating and using their gardens as bathrooms and things of that nature, howling in the middle of the night, the cat fights that are legendary. I can understand why people wouldn't want that a part of their normal living experience. But through the program of trap, neuter, return, a lot of those behaviors are eliminated. When the cats are neutered and vaccinated, they roam less, they fight less. Even their urine doesn't smell as potent as it used to. And the risk of disease transmission is virtually eliminated once all the cats are vaccinated.
Would you say in New Jersey, then, that the overpopulation problem with the cats is getting under control?
Slowly but surely, we are bringing it under control. New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance has an aggressive program to do some outreach and contact feral cat caregivers and teach them about this trap, neuter, return program, which is so brilliantly explained by the Alley Cat Allies folks over there in Maryland and their website, www.alleycat.org. You can go to that website and learn everything you need to know about TNR, trap, neuter, return.
Mm-hmm.
So slowly but surely, we are getting New Jersey's feral cat population under control.
Great.
And it's always helpful when people like myself work with township officials to amend anti-feeding ordinances to allow for feral cat colonies that are properly maintained.
Mm-hmm. We're just out of time for our interview with you, Joe, but I want to thank you for being on the program.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm sure that working with feral cats really must bring home sort of the, make it real for you even more so with working with fur-bearing animals in terms of the fur farming that happens and everything else. I know that when I started to really get into a lot of animal rights issues, having animals around that act as a kind of reference point really makes the issues that much more real.
Absolutely. There's very little substitute for winning over the trust and love of an animal who is essentially wild for all intents and purposes and now has come to trust you and has come to love you in his own special way.
Right. Thanks so much, Joe, for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
We were just speaking with Joe Mealy. He is works with the New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance, and he acts as one of their feral cat advisors. And he also was the 2004 recipient of the Alley Cat Allies Feral Cat Activist of the Year Award, and we're really happy to have him on the program. For more information about the New Jersey Animal Alliance, you can go to www.nj-ara.org, and that information, as well as information about our other guest, Sarah, is on our website, animalvoices.ca. Just wanted to give some information to people who are listening in Toronto about feral cats. If you have encountered a feral cat or a stray, you can contact the Toronto Cat Rescue. They have lots of good information on their website, and they also have a number that I wanted to give people. It's 416-538-8592. Again, that's 416-538-8592, and I'll give that number again at the end of the show. And their website is www.torontocatrescue.ca, and Toronto Cat Rescue is all one word. We're now going to hear from Sarah Whalen, who is the executive director of Pets Alive, which is a no-kill animal shelter that rescues, rehabilitates, and places animals in need, and we're really happy to have her on the program today. She has a lot of experience relocating feral cats, and so we're really happy to have her on the program. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Taking a little break from the cats and happy to talk to you, and we'll try to answer any questions you have.
Great. When you gave me this number, you said this should be a quieter number. What was the first number that you gave me that would be so loud?
386-9738, which would be the sanctuary itself. You'd get to hear lots of different animal noises. We give sanctuary here to dogs, feral cats, retired New York City carriage horses, pigs, goats, chickens, and generally in the background you can hear one or more of the species talking to you.
And one of the things that's so interesting about your shelter is, well, I guess two things I wanted to talk about right off the bat was that it's a no-kill animal shelter, and that you also, it seems like you focus on animals with special needs. So I wanted to talk about those two things. First, so why is it a no-kill animal shelter? Can you tell us the difference?
It's actually not a shelter. It's a sanctuary,
okay.
And we're a member of the American Sanctuary Association. We believe that euthanasia is not the solution to the pet overpopulation problem. Education and safe haven is. We try to give safe haven to as many special needs animals, either to rehabilitate them and eventually find them a good home, or to keep them with us where they're welcome to live forever. I would say that we are the only true no-kill on the East Coast of the United States. We don't select animals to bring here that are adoptable. In fact, we take the animals that are not. Mm. We do not accept privately owned animals. The animals that come here come from other shelters that do not consider them adoptable, or they come directly off the street.
So special needs, does that mean an animal with a disability, or does it mean just non-adoptable for various different reasons?
Well, a disability in most places is age. So we take older animals. We find that they make wonderful companions for older people. I'm one of those myself, and I don't adopt puppies and kittens. I take in the older ones who are calm and peaceful, have a lot of soul already, and are happy to live with me, even though my lifestyle is pretty calm. Special needs, yes, also includes medical problems, hopefully treatable medical problems. If not, then there are problems that can be maintained so the animal is not suffering. We take those too. I think also appearance is considered a disability by people who will adopt animals. Black dogs are notoriously unpopular for other shelters because they're hard to place. Those black cats are hard to place. So I would consider those kind of animals special needs.
Mm. So how do you respond to the common argument that people say then that euthanasia is sometimes the best option and is the most humane thing that you can do for an animal in certain circumstances? What are your arguments against such a position?
Well, I think that there are times in certain situations when other organizations can euthanize, but not to anticipate suffering and kill them because they may suffer in the future. But if an animal is legitimately suffering pain and cannot be treated, then euthanasia, in the true sense of the word, is an option. All the other kinds of killing are just that, killing.
Can you tell us some of the stories associated with the animals that you currently have at your sanctuary? How did they come to you, and how do you end up bringing them into your sanctuary?
Okay, we have two dogs at the moment who come from Greece. I don't know whether you're aware of it, but during the setup for the Olympics in Greece last year, the Greek government decided to rid their streets of stray animals, and there were thousands and thousands of them starving because animals are not considered companions by most of the Greek population. And so what happened was death squads were sent out by the local governments, and they killed the dogs and cats, either by poisoning or by breaking their backs with metal pipes or sticks or however they did it, and they left them to die in the streets and then came back a few days later to clean them up. An American tourist happened to notice that two of the dogs in the pile were still alive, and she scooped them up, took them to a compassionate veterinarian. I understand there aren't too many of those in Greece. And was able to make them healthy enough to be adopted and shipped out of Greece to save their lives. They did have broken backs, and so they have no use of their hind legs except as kind of picture mermaid fins. They push themselves around, but they have full use of their front legs. She sent an email out on the internet trying to find someone who would give them shelter since they had survived such horrible treatment, and then she tried to alert the world about what was going on in Greece. We saw the email and realized that these two animals could happily come and stay with us. We would make accommodations for their special needs. We bought them wheelchairs, and so they were flown from Greece to Middletown, New York. We picked them up. We've had them here now over a year and a half, and they're just two happy critters. One is a miniature poodle, and the other one is kind of a collie mixed female. They're young. They're happy. They make no connection between what they suffer and human cruelty because animals are very forgiving, non-human animals anyway. So Lucky and Zoe are with us, and hopefully someone at some time will be able to have enough kindness in their heart to give them a real home. While they're happy with us, I would so much rather see them with their own family. And if anybody wants to see them, they can go to our website and click on our critters and then on dogs, and then they'll be able to find pictures of Lucky and Zoe, who are really out there looking for a good home.
You said that you got them wheelchairs. I think this is an unusual idea for a lot of people, that an animal with a disability would be given some kind of device that would help them be more mobile or more functional. Can you tell us about the wheelchairs?
They look like little carts. They have big wheels in the back, and the dog's body is held up by the side of the cart so that he can move around, he or she can move around, using their front legs while their rear legs and the rear part of their body are suspended a little off the ground. They have stirrups, so they don't drag their feet along the ground. And we attach a leash to the neck part of the wheelchair, the part that fastens kind of over their shoulders to hold them steady. And they walk around the property, and they have a wonderful time visiting the pigs and the horses and dragging me around. They actually pull in the wheelchair. So they're having a good time, and I know it, and I'm really happy about it. You can get wheelchairs. You just have to look them up on the net. And there are several companies that make them. We buy them from Eddie's Wheels, which will actually come down and measure the dogs. And occasionally, for a rescue organization or a special needs case, we'll donate a wheelchair. We weren't that lucky. But there have been instances since then where they have donated wheelchairs to people, especially seniors that have animals with special needs. So it's a good resource.
A while ago on Animal Voices, we had the authors of the book Stories Rabbits Tell, which is a really fantastic book, and they feature one section. They have a picture in their book of a rabbit that's in a wheelchair and also extremely mobile. And obviously, this rabbit enjoys quite a high quality of life, which I think is just completely unheard of for a lot of people who maybe don't know about animals with disabilities, and that they really can lead such fulfilled lives with the help of these devices as well.
Well, I think the wonderful thing about the non-human species is they don't anticipate being looked down on for having a disability. They're just grateful for the love which they give back, and any assistance you can give them to lead a quality life is accepted joyously. Animals are so much more joyous than we are, and they just don't have the hang-ups and the how-it-looks-to-other-people kind of attitude.
You mentioned that there's so-called farm animals at the sanctuary as well. I was wondering if you could tell us about how they came to be at the sanctuary.
Well, there are many of them. I will tell you about, I'll tell you about Andrew. Andrew is a Jersey cow. When he came to us, he was a bull. It seems that an elderly couple came to the United States to live with their children, and they were from Italy, where in the village they lived in, everybody had a cow that they could milk. So when they came to this posh part of Westchester, New York, to live with their children, they wanted a cow to milk, and their daughter actually bought one for them from a local dairy farmer. And they realized, of course, that they couldn't milk her unless she were pregnant. So they had the cow impregnated by a local bull, and a calf was born, and it was a bull calf, not another dairy cow. the elderly Italian couple thought that was pretty normal, but the people in the town in Westchester did not like the idea of having a bull live on a one-acre parcel. And so they told the couple that they had to get rid of the bull, which they had actually raised well and loved. He was a very friendly bull. They did not want him to be slaughtered. I did not want him to be slaughtered. And so we took Andrew here. Andrew was actually the first cow bull steer that we ever rescued, and I didn't know too much about them. So I decided that the best way to deal with him was to treat him the same way we treat the dogs and cats. And as a result, Andrew now retrieves. He will actually chase the loaf of Italian bread if you throw it. He is now a steer. He's been neutered. And we did have to remove his horns because he was very loving, very affectionate, still is, and had some very, very big horns, which could have been a danger.
Right. That's an image that I'm sure won't leave me for a long time. Him chasing the Italian bread.
You have to come and see it. It's adorable because I actually stand outside the cow's paddock and I will wave it in the air over my head as you do with a dog to say, you know, go get it, you know, and they kind of move left and right. And Andrew does the same thing. The only thing is he weighs about 1,100 pounds. He moves a little slower than your average border collie, but he does have a wonderful time doing it.
Can you give us a sense, then, of the size of the sanctuary? What does the space look like that currently...
Well, we're kind of a primitive farm, really. We have a large dog kennel where we can house about 80 dogs at a time. We also have 77 acres in what was rural farm country and is now, unfortunately, becoming suburbia. The deer and the raccoons just don't know where to go anymore except to come hang out in our field. And we have open horse paddocks with run-in sheds. We don't have fancy stables, and the cows have a run-in shed, and the chickens have a chicken house, and we get lots of fresh organic eggs. We also have an old house on the property, an old brick house, that we are trying very hard to renovate into the largest feral cat sanctuary on the East Coast. We're about halfway there, but do need more funds. What we plan to do is have separate areas for cats with FIV, cats with FELV, and there are many of them that are in the feral colonies, and separate areas for elderly, senior cats. At the moment, we do have one FIV cattery and one FELV cattery, and I just want to note that we have had some of our leukemia-positive cats as long as 8 years. Mm-hmm. They do live a long time if they are not stressed with disease or just plain emotional stress. And we also have a large FIV cattery where all of the cats were feral, and now 80% of them are friendly.
Mm. What is a cattery?
Okay, a cattery is any large area. In our case, it's an indoor area, a room, so to speak, but a very big one with lots of windows where they can watch the chipmunks and the woodchucks and the birds, and climbing posts and hidey places, and an easily cleanable floor,
mm-hmm.
and lots of carpeted areas for them to live and play in and interact.
Mm-hmm.
And what amazes me every time I visit those areas is that many of these cats come from different colonies, different ethnic groups, so to speak, and yet we have no fighting because they're all quite content. They all have access to food, clean water, places to hide in, snooze in, and window seats to sit on. And I have yet to see a cat fight from what people originally think are feral, vicious cats.
When did you start relocating feral cats?
I think the very first time that I personally became aware of the serious problem was in the year 1994. There was a large trailer park in the area that had been sold, and there were hundreds of cats associated with that park. Now, the plan was to take the trailers away, bulldoze the property, and build a supermarket, which, in fact, they did. And I started to worry about the cats. Up until then, I had rescued individual cats, but didn't realize the immensity of the problem. So we got out there with traps, And probably all told, we were able to trap and relocate about 200 of those cats, 180 of whom, feral though they were, have since been placed as companion animals.
Wow.
Yeah. It's wonderful. And then we had a large, very well-known hotel called the Concord, which was in what they call the Jewish Alps or the Borscht Belt, the Catskill section of New York State. And that hotel closed. When it closed, the nearby residents were overrun with cats that up until that time had been fed at the hotel and actually lived in the walls of the ballroom and in the kitchen. And I think if the health inspector had ever actually opened a wall, the hotel would have been closed years before. And the local shelter in Sullivan County decided that the best way to deal with the problem was to go in and chloroform the cats, which they started to do. We did try to get some press coverage, and we got a little bit, enough that we were able to get in there with traps, and we took about 85 cats out of that situation. Only 6 of them stayed with us. The rest were happy to be inside, happy to be provided with food, realized that it was humans that were doing it, and because so many of them originally had been companion animals that were let out, thrown out, or lost, they quickly adjusted to human contact again.
Do you have any tips for people who are encountering feral cats for the first time, or maybe there's a feral cat colony near them and they want to do something to help out those animals?
I think they need to go to the website for Alley Cat Allies and read all they can on this wonderful site about how to deal with them. Their advice is going to be much better and much more complete than anything I can tell you on the phone in a few minutes. But basically, you've got to get help. You've got to stop the population growth. And so you've got to get help setting up a trapping program. You've got to get help from a local veterinarian to spay and neuter them at low cost at a very minimum. And if you need to and cannot find a sanctuary to help you in your area, you must commit to taking care of that colony by providing them with routine food and water and checking on them to make sure that no one is sick or injured. But Alley Cat Allies is a wonderful resource for people who encounter feral cats.
I have the Pets Alive website, which is just petsalive.com, but do you have the Alley Cats website?
I think it's alleycatallies.org.
We'll make sure that we post that on our website as
Please
well.
Please do. It's a wonderful organization.
And what about approaching cats with special needs or that are injured in some ways? Do you have any tips for people just initially if they encounter a cat with an injury?
Well, I think if it's a cat that is disabled enough that you can approach it, that you need to approach it, you need to help. You have to do it safely so that you don't get bitten. But the idea is never, never turn your back on suffering. If you can do that, you're a hard-hearted person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are concerned, get a towel, get a blanket, call your local animal control officer if you need to. Normally, that will result in the death of a cat unless you have a compassionate animal control officer. But if you want to help the cat, get it in a blanket, get it to a veterinarian. Understand that that animal feels the same pain and fear that you do.
You had mentioned that the key really is to get the cat population under control. Can you give us some insight into why there are such problems with cat overpopulation? Where does this problem originate from?
Humans.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really very simple. People are irresponsible. They're so into the concept of cats need to be outside climbing trees and chasing birds, and they're happier that way. In fact, outdoor cats are not happier. They're prone to disease. Their lifespan is notoriously short, I think 3 to 4 years, compared to an average lifespan of 12 to 14 years for an indoor cat. If people would spay and neuter any cat or kitten they acquire when they acquire it, instead of waiting until the cat gets outside, a lot could be done to limit the numbers of outdoor cats, but people being people, you cannot educate everyone. We can only try.
Do you feel like that the Pets Alive organization has been able to address some of the ignorance within our population about cats and what makes them happy or not?
I think in our local area we have been able to, and hopefully people do read our website. We have a message board where anybody can ask a question, and we're happy to answer them. We do host stories about cats with FIV and FELV. leukemia and AIDS. And one of the things I would like to address, if I can, is that many veterinarians will tell you to euthanize a cat with either of those problems, and it's absurd unless you have other cats and you've just brought a new cat in. There is no reason why an FIV cat or an FELV cat cannot live a normal life. And they don't have to be killed. And I don't understand why veterinarians are not doing all they can to educate the public.
I think a lot of people who are maybe unfamiliar with cats, or they think of most animals as being kind of dirty or scary in some way, encountering a cat or dealing with a cat that has a disease, especially something as intimidating sounding as FIV, that they might be worried about their own health. Are these diseases transmittable at all to human beings?
No, they do not cross species lines at all. No, they're not. They're only feline AIDS. It's feline AIDS. And although it operates in a similar fashion to human AIDS, it just simply means that their immune system is compromised. And so if they're subjected to an upper respiratory virus that another cat has, they will get it and it will be harder to treat. So the trick is to keep them indoors, never to let them outdoors. Keep them indoors where there aren't any sick cats that they come in contact with on a daily basis, and they will live a totally normal life. Same thing you would do for a healthy cat.
Sarah, we're out of time, unfortunately, but I wanted to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so very much for having me here. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much for your work with the sanctuary. It's always really inspiring to talk with people who have direct interactions with animals and are making such a difference in their lives on a daily basis.
I have to tell you, it's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Well, thanks, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We were just speaking with Sarah Whalen, who's the executive director of Pets Alive, and that is a no-kill animal sanctuary that rescues, rehabilitates, and places animals in need. They have a lot of volunteers and a pretty extensive website with lots of different critters that you can adopt, and we would definitely suggest checking out their website at www.petsalive.com. And at the beginning of the program, we were speaking with Joe Mealy from the New Jersey Animal Rights Alliance. You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT.FM. Stay tuned for Roadrunner, and I'll quickly just give you the information again for the Toronto Cat Rescue for our Toronto listeners, 416-538-8592. The website is torontocatrescue.ca. Our website is animalvoices.ca. There's archive programs on that site as well as information about our guests, so check it out. Thanks, Rob, for being here and doing the news and co-hosting today, and also thank you to Ken for teching for us today.